Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And today we're going to hear from Otto Oli, an artist based in Catskill who recently opened a nonchalant art space in Cairo. We'll hear all about opening an art gallery in Cairo and what that means these days. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news.
And you.
And you.
And you.
And you.
And you.
And you.
Are listening.
Are listening.
Are listening.
Are listening.
Are listening.
Are listening.
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 You're listening to 90.7. WGXC Accra, Catskills.
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 Today.
East Durham.
East Durham.
East Durham.
East Durham. East Durham.
East Durham.
East Durham.
East Durham.
Catskills.
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 There is an open Irish music session on the first Friday of each month at the American Legion Hall, 92 2nd Street in Athens. Anyone is invited to bring a musical instrument or be part of the audience. You can also bring your own refreshments to the Irish Open Session on the first Friday of every month at the American Legion Hall in Athens. Find out about more events like this on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org, where you can add your own events too if you're helping to put on a community show.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you. Wave Farm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of J. Johannes Freibel Parker of Ravenna, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra with the WGXC weather forecast from the National Weather Service in Albany that says warm and humid conditions will continue in the area. Friday, there's a 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms likely, mainly after 5 p.m. Some of the storms could produce heavy rain. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny with a high of 83. A south wind will spin local windmills 3 to 8 miles per hour. Friday night, there is also a 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly before 11 p.m., with cloudy skies and a low around 64. Then on Saturday, just a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly after 2 p.m., with a high near 83 and partly sunny skies for most of the day. Saturday night, there is a low around 65 expected, and again, a 30% chance of rain. Sunday, there's a 70% chance of some sort of precipitation. It could be showers or thunderstorms, and it'll probably be mostly at midday, with a high near 79 and a low around 63. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, July 7th. Local early morning temperatures range from 62 degrees in Medusa to 70 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 71 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be medium. Today is going to be pretty hot again. I'm not seeing heat warnings as of 5 a.m. this morning, but that could change. Dew points will hit 73 degrees, which is oppressive. Heat index is due to reach 93. Now, unlike wind chill, which you can cancel out by just wearing proper clothes or climbing into any vehicle, heat index is no joke. There is only so many clothes you can take off. You know what not to do. And number one is leave anything in a vehicle. You know what I'm talking about. Babies, pets, grandma, okay? Your bobblehead is going to pretty much melt. What do you think it's going to do to them? Number two, take care of yourself. Hydrate. Sorry, adults. Your sense of thirst tends not to keep up with your body, especially when you're sweating a lot. Drink the fluids. Avoid the sun. Number three, hit up your neighbors. Make sure their air conditioner is working. If it's not, maybe you got a chance to make a new friend. All right, the actual mercury hits 86 degrees at 2 p.m. From noon to a bit after dark, a so-called cold front moves through, moderating temperatures and dropping rain. Thunder could tag along to the party. So just make sure you have water to drink and your devices are charged. Overnight, we dip to a muggy 70 degrees. Saturday, much like today, high of 85 with a stormy afternoon. 68 degrees overnight takes us into an even rainier looking Sunday with a high of 78. Monday, high of 81. Heat warnings could return and it looks like a bit of rain will fall. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 12:50 a.m., high tide at 6:45 a.m., low tide again at 1:31 p.m., and high tide once again at 7:31 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 76 degrees and the tide strength will be high. Sunset today will be at 8:20 p.m., sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:23 a.m. Looking way up, we see there is a geomagnetic storm watch on for today due to a mild Hadouken. X-class flare chances have diminished to 1%, but that could change. Sunspot 3363 is swinging into view, and it looks a bit ferocious. To see pics of this structure from Earth and from Mars, check out the Better Weather Telegram channel. Plasma winds will be average at 488 kilometers per second with a thin density of 2 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio prop is fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. Courage, folks, solar cycle 25 is still on the upswing. There are no chances of aurora tonight. The current sunspot number is 149, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Are you tired of your flying saucer always breaking down on your way to Mars?
Wish you could get more bang for your whoopee at the gas pump?
Well, here at Flying Saucer Mart, we have the perfect flying saucer for you.
It goes as fast as light. It comes in a variety of colors and only costs you 75 whoopee.
Come down to 375 Bionic Ave in Pluto City and fly home with a new used flying saucer today.
Yesterday, a child came out to wonder. Caught a dragonfly inside a jar. Fearful when the sky was full of thunder, and tearful at the falling of a star.
And the seasons, they go round and round, and the pains of ponies go up and down. We're captive on a carousel of time. We can't return, we can only look behind from where we came and go.
Child moved 10 times round the seasons, like when you're older must appease him, and promises of someday make his dreams. And the seasons, they go round and round, and the painted ponies go up and down. We're captive on the carousel of time. We can't return, we can only look behind from where we came, and go round and round and round in the circle. Springs and 16 summers gone now. Cartwheels turn to carwheels through the town, and they tell him, take your time, it won't be long now, till you drag your feet to slow the circles down. The seasons, they go round and round, and the painted ponies go up and down. We're captive on the carousel of time. We can't return, we can only look behind from where we came. Better dreams and plenty before the last revolving year is through. And the seasons, they go round and round, and the painted ponies go up and down. We're captive on the carousel of time. Can't return, we can only look behind from where we came, and go round and round and round in the circle again, and go round and round and round in the circle again.
Good morning, WGXC listeners. You're listening to the Campbell Hudson Sports Report by our very own Dan Witowski.
Yay.
Thank you. Hello. Good morning, Rachel. Good morning, Matthew. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Dan. It's nice to be here with you.
Thank you, Kelly, for that miraculous introduction. Thank you. So there's a couple of things I want to talk about that is happening in the sports world.
Okay.
This week. So basically, if you guys watched, I believe it was last week or so, Domingo Germán pitched a perfect game for the New York Yankees. Now, a perfect game is where you face 27 batters and all 27 go down. He became the fourth pitcher in Yankees history to pitch a perfect game, and became the 24th pitcher in Major League history to pitch a perfect game, and became the first ever Dominican-born player to win a perfect game. To pitch a perfect game.
Thank you. Perfect game. Can we hear somebody say strike out?
Strike out.
Wow, that was strong.
That was strong.
You're out.
Yeah, I.
Wow.
Okay, cuckoo.
So that was a big celebration then, no doubt, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard in Major League Baseball to pitch a perfect game at all, but to be the first ever Dominican-born player to do it. It's just like, wow.
And how are the Yankees doing overall?
They stink.
They stink.
You know what?
They are stinking up a storm.
So
the
Yankees,
Rangers stinks.
Yeah.
You mean the Texas Rangers for the baseball team?
No, his Rangers stinks.
Oh, okay.
Well,
we're going to get to that in a minute.
Okay.
So the Yankees stink, and what
the Rangers stink.
I mean, I'm a Yankees fan myself, but I mean, even I'm.
Well, thank you.
Even though I know that, even I know that they're messing up.
What are their chances of making the playoffs this year, Dan?
50%.
50%. Okay. Well, you've heard it here. Dan makes another prediction: 50% chance of Yankees making playoffs. It's like sounds like the weather. What is the other story or stories?
Just so you guys know, if you guys are Giants fans like myself, Giants training camp starts up actually July 26th of this year, which is pretty good.
This month, yeah.
I'm going to one of the training camps. I've never been to one before.
Cool.
So I'm actually really looking forward to going to that.
Where is the training camp?
It's at the Quest Diagnostics Training Center in East Rutherford, New Jersey. It's right by MetLife Stadium.
Oh, so you're going to attend one of the training days and just
they have a lot of training camps open to the public this year, so I'm going to be able to attend one.
Cool.
Of them. I've never been. I've never been to New Jersey either, so it's going to be good.
Okay.
Well,
yeah. Well,
you're talking to two people, Mr. Princeton guy and Mrs. Brunswick person.
Okay.
And you were also going to report on the Yankees Athletics.
I did that. The last thing I wanted to report was I recently took a trip to New York City to Madison Square Garden to watch the Rangers play.
And you mentioned this to us a while back.
Yeah.
It was in April, the last regular season
game, and they ended up losing due to two goals that were called back. One was called off because of an offsides call that was called back.
Yeah.
And then the other one was supposedly, I don't know where the heck they got this, but the player supposedly kicked the puck into the net.
Right.
And that's why it was called no goal. So basically, we could have ended up winning 3-2, but we ended up losing 2-1.
So here's the thing that I think might. You know, the listeners would want to know is what's it like to be at an actual New York Rangers hockey game? Some people may have never even been to a hockey game. What's it like? The atmosphere
was so cool.
Yeah.
The Rangers fans are absolutely passionate about the Rangers. If something doesn't go their way, wow. I had really good seats too, so basically I was.
How close were you?
I was in section 101, row 15.
Right.
So it was like really close to the ice.
Yeah, near the center ice.
No, it was near the goal. Yeah.
Okay,
but that's where I was, and it was completely
a good view.
Good view, very good view.
A good view. A lot of people wearing Rangers attire.
Yeah. It was completely
jerseys.
Sold out.
Yeah,
I was actually lucky to get tickets. It was sold out.
Yeah, so exciting, right? And it's in New York,
Madison Square Garden. The Rangers fans and the Knicks fans from Madison Square Garden are just absolutely on another level.
Cool.
I've been to a Knicks game before too, and it was a long time ago, but it was
so.
You better be careful before they go after you.
Would you recommend people go see?
I would recommend go seeing a Ranger game. It was my first ever Ranger game. It was the best experience I ever had.
You know, my dad and I are a big fan of New York Yankees, and. There's a TV show of Seinfeld, George Costanza, work for New York Yankees too, and he have a baseball field back of his office of New York Yankees.
Yeah, actually, George Costanza in that episode works for George Steinbrenner at Yankee Stadium. So outside his office, you can actually see the field for Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, because I love Yankees very much, too.
And I do, too.
You've been listening to the Camp Hill Sports Report. I've been your host, Dan Wachowski. Have a good day, WGXC listeners.
Me and my arrow, straighter than narrow. Wherever we go, everyone knows it's me and my arrow.
Tune in or turn out to the July 18th edition of the Ukuleles Unleashed show on WGXC. This month it is broadcast live from the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill. Host Carmen Borgia and John Sturman are doing a reading and singing Harry Nilsson's The Point on ukuleles, and then doing their live radio show in front of an audience at the Bridge Street Theater. Admission is free to this WGXC event. Turn out or tune in to the Bridge Street Theater, 7:45 to 10 p.m. on Tuesday, July 18th at wgxc.org/listen and 90.7 FM.
Welcome to 2023 Tonks, where we're following our democracy of historic times.
Bidenomics in action. Instead of exporting jobs to cheaper labor costs, what we did for decades, we're creating jobs here.
During an appearance at a solar energy equipment plant in South Carolina Thursday, President Joe Biden touted his economic agenda, driven by infrastructure investment, which the White House says led to job creation. The president announced companies have committed more than $500 billion in manufacturing and clean energy investments since the beginning of his administration. A voter in Iowa went head-to-head with former vice president and 2024 Republican presidential hopeful Mike Pence regarding his actions on January 6, 2020, accusing the former vice president of having changed history by refusing to send the election results back to the states for a recount. Pence said former President Donald Trump was wrong about the authority he had.
I know by God's grace I did exactly what the Constitution of the United States required of me that day.
Pence added certifying the election is an issue that continues to be misunderstood and noted the Constitution does not allow the vice president to reject or return votes to states. Republicans are calling out the White House after cocaine was found in the West Wing entry area, where visitors place personal belongings before going on tours. According to White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, the Secret Service is investigating how the substance made its way inside the White House.
Don't have anything more to share on the particulars. Again, when it comes to security, when it comes to anything of those types of protocols, that is something that Secret Service handles.
Once it was confirmed the white powder was cocaine, Republican Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene took to Twitter to demand members of the First Family and White House staff be drug tested. According to his campaign, Adam Frisch, the Colorado Democrat running to unseat Republican Representative Lauren Boebert, has raised more than $2.6 million in the second fundraising quarter, breaking the record for the largest quarterly fundraising for a U.S. House challenger in the year before an election.
We have the closest race in the country. People are getting more and more sick of her antics, angertainment antics.
Frisch narrowly lost to Boebert in last year's midterm, just shy of almost 550 votes, triggering an automatic recount. Frisch conceded before the recount was complete. The newly reintroduced Rebuild Rural America Act would infuse $50 billion into rural areas. Any contractor with the nonprofit ruralorganizing.org says the funding would ignite an economic comeback in parts of the country that often have a hard time competing for federal funds.
Rural communities tend to have smaller populations. They tend to have less philanthropic presence. So the block grant funding, which would deliver funding directly to rural communities, is really important for an equitable distribution of those tax-funded programs that are meant to help communities thrive.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our HRS indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Monday, a federal judge temporarily blocked parts of a new Florida law targeting new Americans and communities of color by stopping some voter registration organizations from registering new voters. Senate Bill 7050 was signed by Governor Ron DeSantis in May and blocks non-citizen volunteers from registering other eligible citizens to vote. Democracy Docket reports that it also criminalizes the possession of voter registration information by any group which may, for example, organize a get-out-the-vote drive. The two provisions would make it more difficult for groups to register and mobilize new Americans and other communities which have a traditionally low turnout of voters. Chief Judge Mark E. Walker ordered a temporary stay on the ban on non-citizens registering voters and criminalizing retention of voter registration data. Walker ruled that the plaintiffs were, quote, substantially likely to succeed on their claim that the citizen requirement violates the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. On the data retention, Walker ruled that the language was vague and could lead to arbitrary and discriminatory enforcement. The stay on the two parts of the law remain in place while the challenge to SB 7050 continues. Judge Walker said in the order, quote, "The challenge provisions exemplify something Florida has struggled with in recent years, namely governing within the bounds set by the United States Constitution." We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
I'm Tom Rowe here in Acre, and we are now joined by Otto Oli. I know I'm going to say it wrong after we practiced several times.
It's really all good. Thank you, Tom, for having me.
And you are from the Nonchalant Art Space in Cara, which is just opened recently, right?
Yeah. Our first show was in early May, and we just had our second opening a couple weeks ago.
What was the first show?
The first show was a show titled Feeling of Falling by a friend of mine named Caleb Ellsbury, who lives in Rensselaerville, New York. And they were kind of like these really dark paintings about threshold consciousness, the state in between being asleep and waking up. And yeah, we had a really fun turnout. It was my first time opening a space, and I'm really humbled that he was happy to do it.
So was that show representative of what the gallery is, or tell us what's the focus of the gallery? You know, are you trying to be one specific thing, or are you trying to do a lot of different things? Or
I think a lot of different things, and I feel like nonchalant was a great word that sort of encompassed that. Because I feel like nonchalant, it can change, and there's kind of like that freedom to do multiple things.
It doesn't lock you down to one specific kind of thing.
Yeah, and I have a lot of interests, and I know I'm really grateful to have so many amazing friends and people in my life who do all types of creative things, and it's been really just exciting to share a space with them and help each other out.
So we'll talk about opening the gallery, but tell us about yourself first. When did you come to the area, and what have you done before?
So I was born in Hudson, New York in 1993, and I grew up not too far from the station out in Durham on a real country road with like no sidewalks. And I was into making snowboard videos initially when I was like 13. I was like obsessed with that. And when I was in high school, I got sort of interested in photography and filming other things. And I'm local to the area, and which is interesting. I feel like I'm in a funny place because I'm local to the area, and I like can go to the grocery store and be like, wow, I haven't seen that person in like 10 years. But then also, have like people I'm friends with who aren't from the area. And I feel just like an interesting position sometimes. I see both sides of the spectrum, and I'm involved with both sides.
I'm just guessing that opening a art gallery in Cairo, you probably get mistaken for not being a longtime resident.
Someone jokingly said I was a traitor in terms of being like a gentrifying force, I suppose, but I don't really feel that way. I thought it was really funny though. I think it's just like when I was growing up here, I'm the oldest sibling, and I didn't really have like an older brother or someone or sibling to like show me the way into the arts, it's really like a hard thing to kind of navigate. And I can imagine there being a gallery around when I was in high school. And I went to Cara Durham High School. I don't even know if I should like say this on the radio, but people would be like, art is a bad word, like it's not cool, it's dumb, you shouldn't do it. And I was like really afraid to be invested in art from like an early age.
What did something happen that got you across that?
I think I just I went to college and met other people and spent some time in New York and Brooklyn, and I've just had like a lot of people in my life who have supported me and like sort of believed in me. And I'm just excited about life and the experiences I've had. And I don't know if nonchalant will be a forever thing here in Cairo, but it's been really amazing so far. And I feel just like it's just been a great learning experience. And I feel like super connected to the people I put on the shows together with. And a lot of friends have helped me out in numerous ways. And it's been just a really lovely time.
So tell us, what was the process like getting the gallery open?
Oh, the process. Well, in January, I started renting that space. I found it on Craigslist.
And tell people where this what's the address?
The address is 503 Main Street in Cairo. There's a big green sign that says Nonchalant. Right now there's a group photo show called Everybody Loves Photography. There's mermaid printed towels in the windows. And it's right across from the town hall, which has a broken LED American flag out front.
All right, then you were telling, so you got the space in January?
In January, it was listed online as a art studio for rent in Cairo, and I didn't know of anything like that, so I just went to go check it out, and someone had, it's like a commercial storefront on Main Street, and someone had been privately using it for a year as a painting studio, so I went and checked it out. I thought it'd be really cool, and maybe I could open a gallery, and I'd really want to do that in the winter, so when May rolled around, we had our first show.
And did it all run super smooth, or were there hiccups to getting the gallery open?
I went to the planning board meetings to get a sign. And when I went to the planning board meeting to get a sign, it was like kind of funny because it was the same day the Dollar General caught on fire.
Right, yeah.
And everyone was really stressed. But I got approved. And yeah, so that was just a funny time because everyone was really worried about the Dollar General.
It was a big story in Cairo that week.
Yeah. It was a really intense planning board meeting, actually. And that's what's so beautiful about life too. It's like, yeah, I like wanted to like start a gallery, but then I never really been to a planning board meeting before, and just seeing that whole process was just like really exciting.
And what was the, did you have an opening to start things off, or how did things get kicking?
I can't think of the date right now, but it was in early May, and Caleb Ellsbury and his partner Ella Prince, two really dear friends of mine, helped me out, and they helped install, we got all the food together, and I try to make it like a fun, like have, we did like a 4 or 5 hour opening, which is pretty long, because I wanted to give people kind of that space to, so people can come from like deeper in the Catskills and people can come from like the Hudson area and the river towns. And, I was really just so surprised. I don't really want to boast, but a couple people have told me they've never seen so many people on Main Street in Cairo, which is really nice. And, some people describe it as, like, the only art thing to do in town. And, that's not, I just wanted, the whole thing just kind of feels like an experiment. I didn't really plan for this to happen. It just, it's how life kind of unfolds in this way sometimes.
Yeah, the Cairo generally doesn't have crowds, like, Gallagher's may have a special event like every 3 months or something. Maybe there's a crowd. And I guess what's the bar called? At the end of the street.
The brewery.
The brewery, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now there might be a sort of a crowd there. But
mm-hmm.
Where else has there been a crowd on Main Street in Cairo in years?
Yeah, no. I really don't know. It was kind of interesting. I was not outside, but the second opening, I think it was June 16th, for Everybody Loves Photography, which is now on view by appointment. On the best way to contact the gallery is on Instagram at nonchalant.website. And that's also the URL, www.nonchalant.website. But I wasn't there outside at the time, but there was a bunch of people, and I guess somebody drove by yelling at everyone, being like, I wasn't there, but I guess it was something like, oh, there's nowhere for my daughter to park. There's a municipal parking lot, which is kind of hidden. It's hard for people to find by the library, I think. But so someone was mad, and a neighbor called the cops, actually, during the last opening. But since I went to the planning board meetings, I knew there was no noise ordinance, and it really wasn't that loud. And I get why people would be scared of a big crowd, too. Change is hard. Especially when you're, you know, I haven't lived on Main Street Cairo for a bunch of years, but I can imagine if you're used to like a sleepy environment and all of a sudden there's like, you know, crazy art kids in like a, huddled around your building. It can be nervous, but, you know, my landlord said we keep it classy and that's what we like to do. You know, it's nonchalant.
So you've got a bunch of screenings coming up this summer, is that right?
There's two coming up. One's in Rensselaerville this Friday in an old church called Conkling Hall. And my friend Ella Prince, who's an amazing photographer, a friend of mine, invited me to show some video works. And there's like two like 20, 25 minute short documentaries I made, and then kind of more experimental pieces on the beginning, middle, and end.
That's this Friday?
That's this Friday.
July 7th?
July 7th at 7 p.m.
At the, what is it called?
It's called Conkling Hall. I think the address is 8 Methodist Hall Road or Methodist Road. And Ella, really, truly an amazing photographer, also has a photo at Nonchalant. So if anybody out there wants to come check out the show, reach out to nonchalant.website, and I'd be happy to show you.
All right. And what's the other screening that's coming up?
This one's pretty fun. Last year, a really good friend of mine and frequent collaborator, Kevin Prince, we worked together on a film about people who mermaid. And we did this about the people who mermaid in New York, and it's called New York State of Mermaids. And this is going to be in Hudson at Kasuri, which is a clothing store I worked at for a couple of years doing photos. But they have a brand new event space that's really amazing. They just did this great event with Art Oh My and Lil Debs on this past Friday, which was really nice. But we're going to show the film there. This artist, Early Berlat, who did this score, original music, is going to play live with some projections. And then also some of the mermaids will be there bringing their tails. Selkie Swim, a swimwear artist based in Hudson, is going to have some bathing suits. So it's sort of like a water theme celebration, and we're going to play the movie.
And when is that?
The 15th of July, so next Saturday.
All right. And what's the next, or how long is the current show is up, and how can people see it?
I got to be honest with you, Tom. I've been feeling a little overwhelmed running a gallery. I work and do freelance work, and I think I'm taking I can't say exactly. There's no date set, but there may be a pop-up coming in July. But I'm more so focused on planning some shows in advance, and I have a good idea for something in August. You know, I really got to just take it one day at a time and not to get too ahead of myself, I think.
Yeah, it's a lot to put on. Doing it for the first time, you don't even know exactly how much is involved, right, until you sort of do it.
Exactly. Yeah, every time I've done an opening, I've been extremely tired after. but it's really an amazing feeling, though, too, just to see people connect, like, people talking and meeting each other who you don't know, and just seeing that I'm like able to make somewhat of a difference on, and it's such a small scale too, but it's just a really, you know, humbling feeling, and so far I'm just really grateful for the adventure this has put me on.
All right, we've been talking with Otto Oli. Yes, I got it. From the Nonchalant Gallery in Cairo. The website is nonchalant.website. Anything else people need to know before we go, or did we leave something out that you wanted to mention?
I think I just wanted to say that we're not going to be open for Upstate Art Weekend. As an artist from the area, and whose like friends and family have been kind of affected by gentrification, I just kind of feel like that organization might—I don't know. I just want to ask the question: like, what does bringing everyone to the area at the same time do? And I don't know the answer, but I kind of just, things like that worry me, because as an artist from the area, I think we just should be careful about how things have been changing too fast.
And often art galleries are the tip of the spear sort of in gentrification,
it's
right?
It's true. It's very true. And I do have some of a complex, I think, too, because I just want to be who I am and stay true to my roots at the same time. And it's not easy.
Well, it's good that you're being thinking about these issues rather than just forging ahead without acknowledging that there are issues involved.
Yeah, no, I don't want to be a traitor, but I do think there are many things that the arts have to offer society, and I think there's a dark side to that too. I'm worried personally sometimes about the rent raising, and I'm worried about people who have lived here for a long time. And it's honestly sad that that these things can cause a gap in a culture, in communities. And
do you think since you lived here when you went to high school and now you live here now, do you think things are better or worse or just different than they were?
In some ways, I think they're the same. I think a lot of people who are from the area sometimes don't feel comfortable talking to people who are new and who have just came here. And I think things are somewhat better, but I just think with the political climate, I still want people to be so divided. And I don't really know if it's better or worse. When I was young, I had no idea that there was a ton of artists already here. Like, this has been going on since before I was born. And I was just, to be honest, I was just extremely shocked when I was in college and I was like, oh, this artist lives there, and, et cetera. 'Cause coming from a small town, those things feel so far away, and they feel like the art world is so hard to reach. And hopefully I can just sort of create a space where I feel maybe nonchalant. The title is kind of plays with the idea of a gallery, because it's nonchalant. It's not high art. We're not trying to be anybody. We're not trying to be the last show. We had some people who had work in, who've put on a lot of things, have shown a lot, and someone who's never shown, and it feels really great just to give people the opportunity. In the last show, we had very local people with people who aren't from here too, and so I want to do my part to create a space for everyone, and that's impossible in itself, but
right.
Yeah.
But you can aspire to that.
Yeah,
and we can all try to get as close as we can to that. All right. Well, thank you, Otto Ali from the Nonchalant Gallery in Cairo. You can go to nonchalant.website for more information. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
All right. Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
For this week's Peace Bucket, we're joined by Helen Jacquard, who is with the Golden Rule, which is a project, actually a sailboat of Veterans for Peace, and they will be making a stop in Albany on July 11th and 12th. So Helen, can you tell us a little bit about, what is the Golden Rule project?
Golden Rule is an historic sailboat that was sailed in 1958 to stop nuclear weapons testing in the Marshall Islands. The crew made it to Honolulu, resupplied and headed out, and the Coast Guard caught up with them and brought them back and arrested the crew. And the big fuss that was made over this helped to bring about the Limited Test Ban Treaty of 1963. That President Kennedy signed. After that, the boat was sold into private hands and ended up being a derelict boat in far northern California. She sank in a gale, And then Veterans for Peace and others restored her for 5 years. We've been sailing for a nuclear-free world and a peaceful, sustainable future since 2015 when the rebuild was finished.
Now, I understand that, you know, initial stop, it was a little, you know, dicey in terms of time coming up the Hudson River, but Tuesday, July 11th, arriving sometime between 4 and 7 p.m. at the dock down there by the Dutch Apple, and on the 12th, you'll be given tours of the boat, and then also at 6 p.m., you're doing sort of a meet and greet and explaining to people what's going on over at the Albany's Friends meeting house there at Madison Avenue. You know, what has been the response and what has been sort of the message about how do we stop the use of nuclear weapons in war?
The response is great. People love this boat. You can see her a long ways away because her bright red sails, one of them has a giant peace symbol on it, and the other has a giant Veterans for Peace logo on it. So you can possibly watch her sail in if she has the sails up. Certainly on Tuesday, July 12th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., we'll have the sails up if we can, because they're so dramatic. So everybody wants to get rid of nuclear weapons. They just don't know how. We advocate for global disarmament, verifiable, irreversible, time-bound, as is called for in the United Nations Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, which went into effect a little over 2 years ago. The United States and other nuclear-armed countries haven't signed it, but as the golden rule is, the treaty is a tool to educate the public about the dangers of nuclear weapons and what we can do to stop the possibility of nuclear war.
Now, unfortunately, of course, the threat of nuclear war is perhaps at an all-time high with the war taking place in Ukraine at this point, and Russia clearly has nuclear weapons, as it perhaps gets Belarus at this point, and with the situation being really unstable in Russia recently. You know, how does one deal with that increased threat of nuclear weapons coming out of the Ukraine conflict?
Well, everybody's very concerned about that. Veterans for Peace is calling for an end to the conflict, starting with a ceasefire that will give time for negotiations and a reasonable settlement to end the war before it goes nuclear. We need to understand that the United States already has nuclear weapons in 5 European countries, and that both countries have said all options are on the table. So both have threatened the use of nuclear war in Ukraine. So the U.S. public needs to understand that instead of poking this big bear with a stick like has been happening and it escalating the war, including now depleted uranium weapons, we need to bring the tensions down, bring the fear level down, and stop this whole thing right now.
You know, and I remember that, you know, one of the things that led to the rise of the Green Party started in West Germany, but throughout Europe, was actually, you know, President Reagan's efforts to deploy first strike nuclear weapons into West Germany in 1980. And because of technically West Germany at that point was a colony of the Allied powers, the West German people did not actually have any say as to whether or not first strike nuclear weapons would be placed in Germany at that point. But, you know, President Obama, you know, considered a relatively liberal, I understand he actually invested close to $1 trillion to upgrade the nuclear weapons? Why did Congress go along with such a massive expenditure of that?
Well, where do some of the campaign contributions come from? They come from weapons manufacturers, including nuclear weapons manufacturers. This whole culture of seeding fear in the minds of the people, and instead of understanding, and a culture of war has led to very powerful, rich weapons manufacturing companies. So I contend that a lot of this is coming from the desire for profit and the desire to be elected as a public official. So, you know, when we take a look at our federal budget, there's never a constraint on military spending, which takes up over half of the discretionary money of the United States. There's always a limit to how much we're going to spend on food stamps, for example. So you're just basically looking at who are the big corporations, what is it that they manufacture? Wouldn't it be nice if they would manufacture windmills and rail systems that we need to reduce carbon? And life-affirming, manufacturing and activities rather than weapons of mass destruction. But one of the things we could do is to stop this almost $2 trillion now nuclear modernization program that is to replace every aspect of the U.S. nuclear arsenal.
Now, as you mentioned, you know, perhaps the most bipartisan issue is increase in military spending. But, you know, is there any movement at all, within Congress to try to curb the use of nuclear weapons by the United States and, of course, by the other countries, starting with Russia?
Not to the best of my knowledge. It seems like all of the nuclear-armed countries are modernizing, you know, putting out new nuclear weapons that are more possibly tactical to use them in a battlefield as opposed to strategic that are mostly used to deter the use by other countries. And that seems to be particularly true on both sides in Ukraine. I'm really concerned about a false flag, including the bombing of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. It seems like Zelensky's setting us up to accuse Russia of such a thing, but I'm not sure.
So we only have about a minute left. So, you okay. know, we did mention Tuesday, July 11th, the boat initially arrived somewhere between 4 and 7 down at the Hudson
July
River.
11th.
Tuesday, July 11th, yes. And then on the 12th, the tours of the board, 6 p.m., Albany Friends Meeting House. What else would you like to say in the last minute about the visit?
If you want more information about our schedule, please go to VFP, as in Veterans for Peace, VFPGoldenRule.org. You can see our schedule. You can follow the boat. There's a link there to a map that updates every 10 minutes. Regarding where is the boat right now, so you can actually see when she's coming in on Monday, July 11th into Albany. So please do visit our website and learn more.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We've been talking with Helen Jacquard of the Golden Rule Project of Veterans for Peace, Tuesday, July 11th, and then the 12th. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. I'm Tom Rowe in Accra with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. Nick Reisman reports in New York State of Politics that investors in New York's pension fund lost money over the last fiscal year, with State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli's office reporting July 6th a negative 4.14% rate of return. DiNapoli said, quote, "Recent months have been trying for investors, but thanks to the state pension fund's diverse investments, members, retirees, and beneficiaries can rest assured their pensions are secure. There is no doubt that challenges lie ahead, with concerns over a recession and potential interest rate increases, but the state pension fund is well positioned to weather these storms," unquote. The pension fund is currently valued at $248.5 billion. Read more about this story in New York State of Politics. Jeff Colton reports in City and State that Democrat Josh Riley announced on July 6th that his campaign for the 19th congressional district nomination raised over $775,000 in the first fundraising quarter of his campaign. Riley lost to Republican Mark Molinaro in the 2022 election for the congressional seat, one of the districts in New York where Republicans flipped control from Democrats. Riley released his fundraising totals ahead of the July 15th federal filing deadline. Earlier in the year, from January to March, Molinaro raised $494,000 in transfers.